The fact that Asians inconvenience this whole narrative on race to the left is very causes the left a lot of anxiety, and they can only resolve it by trying to position Asians not as a minority, but actually as whites.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the show. Before we get going, I want to ask you a quick favor. If you're watching us on YouTube, make sure you're subscribed and also click the bell notification. I know a lot of you guys are subscribed, but you don't always see our episodes. So click that bell notification so you get notified every time we upload a video with a new guest. And today my guest is Kenny Hsu, author of An Inconvenient Minority, The Ivy League Discrimination Cases and the Attack on Asian American Excellence, which comes out in July. Kenny, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks, Brad, for having me. Appreciate it. I've known you for a while.
Yeah, it's great. It's been great to see you, you know, starting out as a young center-right journalist, getting published in the op-ed world, then going on to land a big book deal about a topic that's close to your heart. I think that's an inspiration for a lot of young writers like me who hope to do the same at some point. So maybe just tell us about, I guess, how you got interested in this topic and where it all began, that you got down this path that resulted in you writing a book about identity politics and affirmative action and Asian Americans in modern American life.
Well, I was raised in a Chinese American community. They valued education. Most of the kids in my community were very academically excellent. But we all knew, and it was an open secret in our Chinese American community, that Ivy League colleges and elite colleges would use that excellence against us. I mean, you heard stories, like, sometimes you'll get these like news stories on Facebook about a kid getting into 7 Ivy League colleges, or like getting into 8 Ivy League colleges. And I look at that story and I'm always like, yeah, that kid's definitely not Asian, because that never happens to an Asian person. And lo and behold, you check the link and you go to the source and boom, the guy is not Asian. He's Black or Latino or something else, because that would never happen to an Asian person. Asians are routinely penalized in the college admissions process. They're not counted as diverse, even though they are diverse. And Asian Americans have faced this for a long time now. And so before I started writing this book, I had a very simple fear. My fear was people were going to see that I wrote this book and be like, oh, wow, this guy is just resentful because he didn't get into Harvard or something like that. And my political science professor pretty much expressed that to me. From the outset, when I approached her with this idea, I was like, hey, you know, everybody's talking about like race and diversity issues and stuff like that. And I was like, why don't we talk about like Asians being discriminated in the admissions process? That's pretty cool, right? And she basically gave me a look and she was like, good luck trying to get sympathy for rejected college applicants. And I was like, okay, well, challenge accepted. But no, seriously though, I get this attack sometimes, actually not as much as you'd think, because people actually genuinely are sympathetic to anyone who is treated unfairly based on the color of their skin. But sometimes I get this criticism, like, oh, Kenny, you just didn't get into college or whatever. Kenny, you're just representing people who are bitter and resentful at not getting into college. And over time, I started to realize, yeah, like they are bitter and resentful that they didn't get into college, you know? And by the way, like they have justification to be bitter and resentful that they didn't get into college because of the color of their skin, because it's not based on their merit. It's based on the fact that they look different. I mean, who wouldn't be resentful about that? So yeah, they are resentful. And in my book, I talk about a lot of that resentment and how that steeps out and how that affects Asian Americans of every persuasion. But I realized that I have to get this book out there. I have to stand up for these people, for this community that I care about and that I believe in.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from. And you mentioned something that I think is interesting. I want to pick up on. Asian Americans are diverse. They speak many different languages. They come from many different countries. They're first generation, second generation, third generation. They're not all the same and they're not white. But I guess the left-wing identity politics narrative doesn't treat them as part of the identity politics crowd. It doesn't give them affirmative action points. It doesn't give them oppressed points. And that's what results in this. So I guess before we even dive into the affirmative action specifics, how does that left-wing framework even justify itself on how it views Asian Americans? Can you walk us through that and why you think it's wrong?
Well, this is why, Brad, I entitled my book An Inconvenient Minority, because Asian Americans inconvenience the left's narrative about race. The left's narrative about race is that if you're white, you're oppressor, you're privileged, everything like that. And if you're black, or if you're a person of color, you are oppressed. You are a victim of white supremacy. And they think that that judgment continues on throughout their entire life, that there's no way of escaping that judgment. But Asian Americans inconvenience that narrative because we are a minority. And by the way, we have been historically oppressed and discriminated in this country. I mean, just take a look at Chinese Exclusion Act, the Japanese Internment Act, everything like that. Asian Americans have faced racism and discrimination in this country. The recent spate of anti-Asian attacks, you know, have just confirmed what we already know. And yet, they have still managed, in spite of that discrimination, to achieve academically in this country and to attain middle-class American status. Asian Americans actually average a median income that is higher than the average American, that is higher than even white Americans. And so what that shows me is it shows me that the left's race narrative does not tell the entire story. That if you work hard, if you value education, you can achieve in this country. And the left is resentful of that. They don't like that Asians are like that. Because it tears apart their entire narrative that we have to blame the white man for systemic racism in this country.
Yeah, and I think Asian Americans are a really good example that I do think, like you said, there is a legacy of anti-Asian racism. There's certainly a legacy of anti-Black racism in this country, too. But I don't accept kind of the left-wing premises about how much of current outcomes are due to that, right? There's lots of factors that go into it all. But Asian Americans, like you said, they out-earn white people. They have better academic outcomes. And so there's actually a gap between Asian Americans and white people. Now, the same gap between white Americans and African Americans or other groups is often used as evidence of a systemically racist society. But nobody would look at our society today and say that it is skewed in favor of Asian Americans against white people. So is it just that this successful group in our society just kind of takes the whole narrative apart? Is that what's behind the backlash?
Yes. Yeah, so there is... The left central premise, and you see this in today in Kamala Harris, her rhetoric about equity. The left central premise today is that differences in outcomes are because of systemic factors that are not related to the individual. So that's why when they see that Blacks earn lower wages than white Americans, they blame it on white supremacy. But of course, your point rings true. Asians out-earn whites, so should we blame that on Asian supremacy? Is there an Asian supremacist culture in the United States? I mean, how stupid! It's just dumb. It's right. It's something that I don't. But then the backlash to that. Is the calling for the left-wing response to this is the idea of white adjacency. The left-wing response to this is that Asian Americans are actually white adjacent. That's what they say. In terms of a minority, we're not a real minority because we adopt too much of whiteness. We are complicit in white supremacy. That's what they say. Why? Because we focus on education, we have two-parent families, we have lower crime rates, and all of these are so-called white supremacist values. Now, I think it's very racist to say that these values belong to any racial group, because these are right. values that can be adopted by any racial group. And so I think that but the thing about these, the thing that ties all of these values together is that they're, you ultimately, you as the individual, had to make the choice to adopt these values. And so the fact that Asians inconvenience this whole narrative on race to the left is very, causes the left a lot of anxiety. And they can only resolve it by trying to position Asians not as a minority, but actually as whites.
And that is what some of the people on the woke left have tried to do. And one of the manifestations of that, I want to shift gears and talk about one of the main topics of your book, affirmative action, is one of the manifestations of that idea that Asian Americans are not treated as an under as an oppressed class or as a minority class in affirmative action. They're actually viewed even lower than white people when it comes to the standards. But first, can you just walk us through the facts of affirmative action? What does it look like? What are the discrepancies numerically? Because I don't know that everybody's as familiar as with that as you might think. So can you just walk us through all of that?
Sure. So affirmative action arises from a narrative. And I'm not saying that this narrative is either wrong or right, but I want to paint this narrative to you. This narrative is that America has historically been anti-Black. And in order to rectify, and this is, I think, honestly, this is the best way I can explain it. In order to rectify the injustices of America being anti-Black, we have to be pro-Black. And we have to be positively, proactively pro-Black. And that is what affirmative action is. Affirmative action is an attempt to rectify for historical injustices by presently elevating Black Americans into certain positions in society, particularly elite positions. They're not interested. People who are interested in affirmative action are usually not interested in making more Black carpenters or more Black tradesmen or more Black plumbers. They're more interested in having more Black CEOs, more Black Hollywood stars, more Black Harvard admittees, the elites. They want more Black elites. And so that is, and the reason why is because affirmative action advocates believe in W.E.B. Du Bois, Du Bois's theory of the talented 10th. The idea that the elites of society of a particular race are going to elevate the rest of society of a particular race. The issue with W.E.B. Du Bois's talented 10th theory is that it doesn't really work in practice. The Black elites who are elevated have a temptation to not go back into their community and not necessarily help to their community, but just linger and stay with the elites that they have now been elevated to become. And that is a critique that, by the way, is not a right-wing critique. That's actually a left-wing critique that I've talked to with people of historically Black colleges and universities. People who are elevated into positions in which they're not qualified for, but are elevated because of their race, oftentimes are lured into a sense of their own elitism and their own arrogance, that they don't go back and they help their community. So that's affirmative action. That those are a couple of problems I have with it from the standpoint of somebody who is in that community.
And it's not just about African Americans either, right? Can you tell us how it shapes the college admissions process in particular, affirmative action?
Yeah, so Harvard University loves to say that race is just one of many, many factors in its admissions process. And I will retort that Harvard's admissions process, merit is just one of many, many factors of the admissions process, because Harvard very, very carefully balances its class to both meet desired racial balances and desired balances of many of its other priorities, of which merit is really only one singular factor. They have extensive race preferences. The Department of Justice revealed, this was Yale University, which adopts very similar admissions process to Harvard, but Yale gives you, in every stage of the admissions process, Yale assigns you a rating. So you start out at this regional committee. Yale gives you a rating, and they give you a plus if you're Black and a minus if you're white or Asian. And then you go up to the next committee, and they give you a plus if you're Black and a minus if you're white or Asian. And then they go up to the, and then a subset of those people are taken to the final review committee, and they give you a plus if you're Black and a minus if you're white or Asian. And so basically the Asian and white penalty in these admissions process is compounded four times in the admissions process. And that's why an Asian American with the same test scores and an Asian American with the same GPA as a Black applicant, as another well-qualified Black applicant, is still about, I think, a seventh as likely to get into one of these universities than if they were a different race.
Wow. How is this legal? I know that it has been upheld as legal in the past, and we're going to get into the challenge to it that's ongoing, but just on its face, how are schools in particular, not just private schools like Harvard and Yale, but public schools, are allowed to treat people differently on the basis of race in their application process? How is that legal? How did that happen?
Because Harvard, for lack of better word, was able to seduce the Supreme Court into doing so, for lack of better word. Bakke, Regents of California versus Bakke, was a Supreme Court case that enshrined race in the admissions process, that allowed colleges to use race in the admissions process. By the way, what colleges are able to do in the admissions process, no other institution in America is, besides the government, is allowed to do. Like, if you're a private business and you were trying to like give loans to applicants and you're like checking on some of their metrics, like, God forbid you consider race in the application process to give out loans. If you're trying to like rent a home, if you even consider things that are proxies to race, like zip code, which you can be sued for racial discrimination. And yet Harvard is basically allowed to use all of these race and race proxy factors to approximate race in its admissions process. And it's because of this Supreme Court case called Regents of California versus Bakke. And in this Supreme Court case, which divided the justices, by the way, there are nine justices. Four of the justices were for the University of California's race conscious admissions. Actually, there were four of the racial quotas. They allowed the university to have racial quotas in its admissions process. Four of the justices were against it. And then one of the justices was the tiebreaker, and his name was Lewis Powell. Lewis Powell was a Harvard law alum, and he ruled, and his ruling, this one justice, not the nine justices, one justice made the decisive ruling. And his ruling was that it was okay to use race in the admissions process so as long as you didn't have racial quotas. And basically what he said was, it's okay to use race as a plus factor, But you can't, as long as you don't have like explicit racial quotas. Now, of course, what this means in practice is that Harvard is allowed to do whatever it wants with race, as long as it says, oh, we don't have explicit quotas. We're just using race as like one of many factors. That's it. And by the way, the crazy thing about this was in that decision, you can go to Powell's opinion on this decision. He says, there is one university that I think does this better than any other university in America in terms of in terms of racial diversity. You know what that university was? Harvard. He said Harvard's racial policy is the best policy because they don't use explicit racial quotas. They use race as just a factor in admissions. And that's where we get what we got today.
And now tell us about the case, the Students for Fair Admission versus Harvard. So you've been since the beginning of this big case covering it, but just break us through, like, who are the plaintiffs? When did it come about? What's the premise? And just talk us through this case because it's a big one.
So Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard, which is actually in the Supreme Court right now, could potentially be, if successful, the biggest challenge to race preferences since Bakke. It was started, the plaintiffs of this case was this man named Edward Bloom. He has filed many cases in the past. He's filed many cases in the past basically trying to stop the use of race in everything. Which I think is a pretty admirable goal in general. There's some people criticize him for that. But what happened was after he lost a case called Fisher versus University of Texas, where basically a white woman was challenging the University of Texas's system, and actually the court supported his case at first, but then at the last minute, Justice Anthony Kennedy's like flipped, who, by the way, Justice Anthony Kennedy was considered like the most libertarian justice at the time, like respect the individual and everything like that. But in that case, Justice Anthony Kennedy made like a 180 flip and sided with the liberals of the court to protect University of Texas's race conscious admission system. So they lost that case 3-4. And I think two justices absent. And so this case, so he moved on to this case, Students for Fair Admissions, and the difference is Asian Americans. He uses Asian Americans as the plaintiffs. And this organization, Students for Fair Admissions, represents mostly Asian Americans. Now, what's great about this, or what's interesting about this, depending on your side of the aisle, what's interesting about this this case, and that makes it different from other cases, is that the use of Asian Americans, Asian Americans cannot be accused of white privilege. you can't say, oh, you guys are just privileged people. What?
They can be if you're willing to get very creative.
If you're willing to get a little creative, yeah, they can be. And by the way, this is what the left has become. They've had to get a little creative. But this organization represents Asian American applicants, and I think this makes the dynamic a lot different. Because now it's not just about, okay, let's stick it to the white man, bye-bye Abby, or bye-bye Abby Fisher. This is about, okay, actually, the ideals of America that we're fighting for, which is meritocracy, judgment based on the content of your character, not the color of your skin, is not just a tool of white supremacy. This is actually an ideal that Americans of minority races all want.
Yeah. And so I think it's a really exciting case and a really promising case, but maybe walk us through the prospects of it. With this now being a 6-3 or arguably 5-4, if you consider Chief John Roberts, it is a conservative majority court. Do you think there's a chance that we, in this case, that we could see those precedents overturned and affirmative action struck down?
Yeah, there's definitely a chance. Here's what the other side has going for it, though. The defendant, Harvard University, has spent a ton of money on this case. And I reveal it in my book, which I will not say in this podcast. But I reveal it in my book how much Harvard has spent on this case. And Harvard has spent it very, you would say, very efficiently. They've hired a big lawyer to try to attempt to dissuade justices the idea that it is discriminating against Asians. And so their defense was actually accepted by the original district court, a liberal district court justice named Allison Burroughs. Their defense was accepted. So the Supreme Court will have to work with appellate just jurisdiction over the original jurisdiction, jurisprudence of Allison Burroughs, which actually acquitted Harvard in this. But the defense mainly rested on the fact that they used this expert study by this guy named David Card, who is an economics professor at UC Berkeley. And David Card basically said, oh, Harvard doesn't discriminate against Asian Americans when accounting for Harvard's preferences for zip code, Harvard's preferences for neighborhood, Harvard's preferences for desired occupation, and the use of this, and most importantly, the use of this personality score. Basically, what Card argued was that Harvard doesn't discriminate against Asians because Asians are actually just lower personality people, according to Harvard. What? Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, because Harvard grades applicants on three metrics: academics, extracurriculars, and this personality score. That's what the admissions documents revealed. And this personality score is highly subjective. And it's funny, it's really interesting, because Asian Americans score highest average on academics. They score highest among all the races over whites, blacks, and Hispanics on extracurriculars. But then when it comes down to this personality score, Asians score the lowest by a vast, steep majority. And you know what this personality score measures according to Harvard? It measures things like likability, humor, charisma, those kinds of things. And where do they get this information? Well, they don't get it from alumni interviews, because Asians score just as high as whites in alumni interviews. They don't get it from teacher recommendations, because Asians score a little bit lower than whites, but higher than blacks or Hispanics on teacher recommendations. And they said they don't get it from any of the objective measurements of personality that you can get, but they get it from somewhere. And my argument is that they use it as a proxy for race.
Wow, that's really bad. That's really glaring and disturbing. Yeah. But so to wind us down on this topic, what's your prediction for the Supreme Court outcome? I know it's always hard to tell, but do you have a sense of how it will go?
If it makes it to the Supreme Court, I think the Supreme Court is going to rule for Students for Fair Admissions. They're going to rule against Harvard, yeah.
That will send a shockwave through the country, I will say that, and that will be an interesting debate that emerges from it, everybody. Kenny Hsu, author of An Inconvenient Minority, The Ivy League Discrimination Cases, and The Attack on Asian American Excellence. It's coming out in July. You can pre-order it now in the link that's in the show notes. Now, Kenny, for the most important part of the show, hit us with your most controversial food opinion.
Wow, my most controversial food opinion. I think anchovies are great.
Ew, what do you eat them?
They're just great.
You eat them on pizza or just plain? You just pop it.
I eat them, dude. I eat them all the time. I love anchovies.
Really gross. Oh, but I don't eat any fish, so maybe I'm just.
You don't eat any fish?
No. Wow. No fish. No shellfish, and I'm from New England. That's like seafood is our big thing. But no,
oh my gosh. I
never liked it. Anchovies, I always thought are actually the least bad type of fish because they just taste like salt.
Okay, well, then there may be some room for common ground here, Brad.
But you know what? I guess with food takes like that, I can see why that you get a low personality score then. Okay. No, I can't. All right, Penny.
I haven't requested my admissions documents yet. We'll see.
All right, Kenny. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks so much, Brett.